Hi, you guys want some cookies? 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 Cookies?
From the new garage, there's an umlaut over that U. You better know, you better recognize. It's the Throwback Podcast, your guide to music and culture. If you happen to be born in exactly 1980, I am Dan Hansis, joined as I always am by my pussy buddy, Bobby Castrone. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Dan. Look at us. Look at us. Still here.
Back in the garage.
Back in the garage. Feels good.
Back, like Stevie Winwood once said, back in the high life again.
Who would have thought 8 years ago when we were like, let's do an Oasis podcast, that we would still be here.
Still here.
Doing things. Still be friends, too. I mean, that's still...
buddies. Business partners, I like
mostly
to call it.
Business partners, yes.
Yes, we're back for another episode. This is a Coldplay week. Which is it's a tough one. There's a lot of, personally speaking,
yeah.
I won't speak for you, Bob. I have a lot tied into this band and a lot of, I don't know, like issues. It's almost like, when you're in a long-term relationship and you break up and then a lot of time has passed and enough time where you've moved on with your life totally. But if you catch yourself in a quiet moment and you start to reflect and you really start to think about it, you start to realize how truly gargantuan this part of your life was, and also you that sense of wistfulness and the regret starts to eat you up a little bit.
Right.
So the more you think about it, so you kind of shut it out, and that's kind of been my Coldplay experience the last decade or so.
Right. And then every once in a while, like it's late at night, you're on Instagram, you're like looking up Coldplay, and you're like, oh, wait, private. Why is it private? So then you're like, maybe Coldplay's on Facebook. So then you go to Facebook and you're like, how does Coldplay not have a Facebook account?
Still talking about Coldplay.
So then you're just like Googling Coldplay and
sweating profusely.
You're going
with a boner.
Then you get really desperate. You go into like the internet, the Wayback Machine on the Internet Archives, and you're like, maybe I could find an old blog with Coldplay. Right? That's what you're talking about.
Kind of like that, Bob, but it got and then a little
eventually,
strange there.
Then eventually you're on Venmo and you're like, oh, Coldplay, I could see what Coldplay's doing on Venmo. And you're like looking at Coldplay's recent Venmo transactions.
Right.
And you're like, I wonder if Coldplay enjoyed their pizza.
Well, yes. And I believe this ends with you sobbing completely nude in front of a mirror.
To Coldplay.
To Coldplay.
Yeah.
Of course.
It all makes sense.
Yeah, we're talking about their, fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the last great Coldplay album, and opinions vary there, but we're going to get into all of that. A very special throwback podcast. And like we said in our return, we did the greatest Night in Pop episode, looking back at that documentary and that song and that era in music in the mid-1980s. We will be covering, you know, kind of fun things like that. We're going to revisit some classics from... albums that we've already covered in the past 6 years, but kind of just revisiting them, maybe with some friends, maybe just ourselves. And we're still, in addition to countdowns, going to sprinkle in albums that we hadn't hit in the first 5, 6, 7 years of this show. I have no idea how long we've been doing the show. You could say 20, I'd believe you. And this is one of the albums that I was sincerely, Bob, surprised to learn that we never did. Are we certain that we never did Viva La Vida?
Not positive. But I'm pretty sure we've never done it. We've definitely done...
That's good enough for me, by the way.
We did Rush of Blood to the Head. I do kind of... I don't remember that, but I know we did it.
I do recall that very early.
Very early.
And we did do Parachutes, their debut album.
Again, remember nothing
I
from
think.
It.
But but so we did not do this album.
No, we did not.
It's safe to say we, unless we really are running low on ideas, I don't think we're going to do any other Coldplay albums after this.
I don't even think I can name any Coldplay album after this.
What I want to know, I think kind of what I want to get out of this episode is I want to know how we got, let's say, from this.
Thank you. Yep.
Two, like, fucking this. Shut up. Like, I want to know how that happened and whether this album played a role, because I would think that this, because this is one of the albums that really, where they really push boundaries and let you know that they were pushing boundaries. And you would think that that this album would be a gateway to continued exploration that would take them in a very different, but I don't think that's what happened at all.
No.
I think this album that we're going to get into, Bob, was very much an outlier in their catalog. And if you want to ask me privately, as a massive fan of this band at that time, that was probably a lot of work for them and a little too hard. And Chris, at a certain point, Chris Martin was like, I like Malibu.
Yep.
And banging famous girls and talking about love. And I'm just going to kind of go into a cruise control that will make any other artist's cruise control look like they're sitting in like standstill traffic on the 405 by comparison.
I'm going to do what it took Aerosmith a couple of decades later to get around to. And I'm just going to work with people to make the music for me and make the loudest, biggest pop anthems I can. And then just kind of hang.
Bob, like, what the fuck is this?
No, come on, no. Stop it. Oh, God. Is this Savage Garden?
It could be.
This could be Truly, Madly, Deeply, part two.
And I'll tell you what, Bob, I could go with this band into certain places. Like, this is something I can, as the kids say, I could fuck with this song, Bob.
The kids have never said that about this song, but you're right.
Like, I got on the Chainsmokers Coldplay train in 2017, and I was okay with it.
Yeah, I did too.
But what I can't stand by, Bob, I mean, he's talking about Batman at this point. There are a lot of, like, I can't get behind, like, this. I can't do it. And how did it happen, Bob?
I don't know.
That's what we're going to talk about.
We're going to find out, though. We're going to figure it out. We're going to get to the bottom of it.
But I don't think our incoming exploration of Viva La Vida, I don't think it's going to give us any answers, because...
Well, we got to look.
It's a different band.
No, we got to look. It's the same band. We got to look. We got to pull out the magnifying glasses.
I kind of remember you telling me that this song is good.
I've never said that.
You sure? I kind of remember you saying the new Coldplay was good, and it was this, and I was like... I think Bob suffered a Rivers Cuomo-like head injury.
Oh, no, I did try to convince you this was good. You're right.
Yeah, let's just listen to the chorus.
Yeah. Here we go. No, it wasn't this one. There was another new one.
I think it was that one.
This is it.
But we are far away from... I mean... Oh, no. Now I'm thinking about her. All right, we got to get out of this. It is a band that evoked a lot of feelings. And if you are of a certain age, if you happen to be born, let's say in between 1979 and 1981, for example.
Good example.
I'm
just throwing it out there.
This band... you might have, and if you were a fan of certain anthemic rock themes to music, you might have had a lot invested in this band's ability to persevere through the years and become the next version of a certain Irish band that you and I don't always see an eye to eye on. But they were supposed to be that band for a new generation.
What happened?
But the singer decided to stay in Malibu and bang famous blondes.
Which, by the way...
Which is not a bad life.
Not a bad life. Can't really blame him. Really.
I can't blame him for that. All right. So let's go there, Bob. Let's go to... I know for a fact this was 2008.
That is correct.
I know that for a lot of reasons, but maybe most of all because there might not be another year that I more closely associate with music. And the time where it came out, then when we were living in Hollywood, in the hills on El Contento Drive.
Yep.
And everything that we were hearing on the radio, driving around Los Angeles, going to diners to write and work on various projects, some more doomed than others.
All doomed, though.
All ultimately doomed. But it is such a time capsule. Any yes. music that comes out, whether it was peak Kanye or peak Katy Perry, or mm-hmm. at this point, Coldplay kind of at the height of their power is getting a number one single, which we're going to get to off this album. Like all of these, like MGMT blowing up, like, I mean, all this entire era of music is just burned into my brain.
Yeah, we had all of these songs that we would play in this house, that it was me, you, Jason Zumwalt, our friend Brian, the four of us living in this house in the hills, listening to not even mixes, but I just feel like we would put on the same songs over and over again, whether it was Albert Hammond Jr. or
Albert Hammond Jr.
of Montreal.
Yep.
Like, it was just such a time and a place.
Phoenix.
And there's nothing I remember more. So this album came out on June 12th, 2008.
Yeah.
I will always remember the announcement that Coldplay had a new song coming in like 24 hours. Must have been like a month before this. And running around telling everybody, Coldplay has a new song coming out. Like it was the Beatles landing in America. Like I was so excited that Coldplay had a new single that was coming out in a day. And I remember like we were shooting something, I think, for the post show. And like telling like Michael Bush and these other actors that we were working with at the time, like, hey guys, just so you know, Coldplay has a new song coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, new Coldplay and song coming out. Yeah.
And the general reaction from everybody was kind of like, gives. That's right. Oh, really? Good. Okay. But we were excited.
But because even by 2008, there was a healthy demographic that didn't think Coldplay was cool or good. But they were most definitely highly relevant. I mean, by this point, their first three albums are all massive on different scales. But even the previous album, X and Y, while it has not aged well and didn't get reviewed very well at the time, even though it was a massive hit for them, while it kind of dinged them a little bit, New York Times wrote like a scathing hit piece about the band around the time of their third album, 2005. So this was the album that not only was it an important kind of a pivot point for Coldplay, it was also, there was a lot, and this is still during the height of music journalism and Rolling Stone and music blogs and Pitchfork and Stereo Gum and all these different places where the reports trickling out about this album that they are now Coldplay after the last album, they have now connected with Brian Eno and Danny Lenoir, and they're doing the David Bowie U2 thing where they're going to reinvent their sound. And there was so much buildup to what eventually came. And that's what we're going to get into today.
Yeah. So we're going to start in June, 2008, June 12th.
By the way, a path of, resistance, high resistance, that again you could tell by everything that came almost immediately after and beyond, of course, that they were not interested in working that hard ever again.
Yeah,
this sounds like an album that was a lot of hard work,
yeah,
for better or for worse. They were done with that after this point.
They were teaming up with the Chainsmokers immediately once they finished.
Chainsmokers were like 9 at the time, and they were like, guys, in about 13 years, you're going to be the cheesiest pop stars in the world, and we are going to have a number one hit together.
We need you.
They're like, that's impossible. You're the guys that did Yellows. Like, trust us.
You'll see.
You'll see. We'll get there. Just be ready.
And they were.
They sure were.
Well, nothing happened in June of 2008, Dan. It was a dud of a month.
Okay.
Bo Diddley died.
Tough one.
Tim Russert died.
That was sad.
Bill Gates stepped down as the chairman of Microsoft to focus on creating COVID, I guess. I don't know.
What else?
Some movies came out, but they were all terrible.
Let's hear them.
Don't Mess with Zohan came out.
That was the Adam Sandler as a hairdresser film, yep. If I recall correctly.
Never seen it.
But that's not the one where he's the devil. No, that's Little Nicky. He had some real pieces of shit.
That's not even the worst movie that came out that month.
What's worse?
The Love Guru.
Oh God.
And that's not even the worst movie that came out that month.
Worse than The Love Guru? That's like the worst movie ever.
The Happening.
Oh, that was, man, what a strange year for movies. Weird. So the worst M. Night Shyamalan movie, the worst Adam Sandler movie, and what was the other one?
The worst Mike Myers
movie. The worst Mike Myers movie. Like, these are career killing films.
Yes.
Wow.
All in June. But pop culture was not lacking in terms of great music. The number one alternative rock song, Dan, the month that Coldplay's Viva La Vida came out, was this masterpiece.
You think I'd be ready?
I would think so. I mean, you're a little rusty. It's been a while since we've done this.
I am not. And now I will remember what you said it was. And now it is coming to me.
It's not coming to you at all. Your hands are not typing a thing.
It is coming to me because it was... Oh, fuck you.
There you go.
I remember. Go we'll fuck see. Yourself.
Go fuck yourself. There we go.
They say I need some Rogaine to put in my hair. Work it out at the gym to fit my underwear.
Speaking of bands that you have to have difficult memories about and reevaluate your entire relationship.
Who's speaking of that? All right.
Dude, this is in terms of like head injury Cuomo era, like this is far from the bottom of the barrel musically. Lyrically, it's got to be. I mean, Bob.
Yeah, no, this was a bad time.
They say I need some Rogaine to put in my hair.
We don't have to do this.
Yes, we do. If we're going to do this with Coldplay, we have to talk about this band as well, because I know they meant a lot to you.
Of course.
Work it out at the gym to fit my underwear. Oakley makes the shades to transform a tool. You'd hate for the kids to think that you've lost your cool.
All right, I'm waiting for the bad lyrics.
Holy shit.
I'm waiting for you to get to something embarrassing.
I'm going to keep going. I'm going to do the things that I want to do. I ain't got a thing to prove to you. I'll eat my candy with the pork and beans. Excuse my manners if I make a scene. I ain't going to wear the clothes that you like. I'm finally dandy with the me inside. Hmm. Man. That's the guy that wrote the Blue Album.
I had completely covered up my Weezer tattoo at this point in their discography. I was out. With the exception of The Greatest Man That Ever Lived off the same album, I had completely given up on Weezer.
I think it's fitting that this is the song that was... I mean, they still had enough juice and pop to have a alternative rock hit. But, I mean, you want to talk about a band and a principal songwriter who lost the plot. If there was anyone that approaches Chris Martin, it's Rivers Cuomo.
Well, I don't want to get into this right now, but you're wrong.
Oh, no.
Because Rivers got it back.
No, he didn't. He did not. Once you, it was irreversible, the head injury he suffered. You were never going to get back to 2001 Rivers after the injury.
No, but unlike Chris Martin, he didn't completely abandon it and make dance music from that point on. He's, you know, the White Album's good.
He actually somehow made worse music.
He did. He hit a lower low, I think, but then he's kind of righted the ship a little bit. It's not blue.
Don't,
it's not Pinkerton.
Don't do this to yourself, Bob.
It's not green even. It's not Maladroit.
You know what you sound like?
I know what I sound like.
You sound like a abused partner. You've been beaten down so much that it's Stockholm Syndrome at this point.
It is. But the White Album's good.
All right. Anything else, Bob, from the era?
That's it. Really not a great month when you're looking at the movies and the music.
No.
No.
But... you know, when Viva La Vida drops, we're going to get to it. It wasn't the song that everyone remembers from this album that started their promotion. Were you aware of that?
I was aware of that.
Yeah. And it's not the song that starts the album either. In fact, this album begins as a very meticulously thought out album by an artist that's trying to make a statement, mm-hmm. must, with an instrumental piece. You feel it?
I'm feeling it.
55 million streams of this on Spotify.
It's a big album.
What else is going on, Bob?
Yeah, I don't know. What's going on with you?
Not much.
How's the fam?
Good. I don't know them. They don't know me.
Yeah, that works.
All right, here we go. By the way, Viva La Vida, also a very meticulously thought out move here. They could have just called Viva La Vida.
Right.
Viva La Vida or Death and All His Friends. You see, this is a thematically tied together piece of art.
Mm.
Here we go. And here we go. So it just kind of goes on for that, like that for a couple minutes.
I like it though.
I like it. And it does sound different.
I mean, why don't you throw a couple of like Chris Martin lines here about wearing Oakleys and eating pork and beans? I don't know, like being cool.
Well, I'll say this, that, you know, I think less than a year after they put out this album, they put out an EP. Do you recall this? That had some remixes and a couple B-sides on it. And it that begins, as I recall, with Life in Technicolor Part 2, which is a fully fleshed out version of the song with lyrics included and all that. And I think it's one of their better songs, period.
Yeah.
So it kind of drives me a little nuts that they went with this like overly... I don't know. It's a little bit pompous and a little blowhardy at points, this album. And the big swing to go with an instrumental to start where you had a perfectly good song ready to start the album annoys me.
Yeah, that's annoying. That's like Noel Gallagher throwing out his best songs as B-sides. It's kind of annoying.
Right. You're not always going to have these songs in the chamber. Let's listen to a little bit of like what... Listen, if we put out our own version of Viva La Vida, let's put out the whole fucking song.
You mean when we do our podcast episode where we fix Viva La Vida, like season 16 of the podcast?
I know you guys don't want to listen anymore, but check this out. All right, let's listen to like what it may have been in another universe. There's a wild wind blowing down the corner of my street. Every night there, the headlights are glowing.
So good.
Yeah.
See, this is hitting me that in 2008, I definitely didn't buy the CD of Viva La Vida. I think I downloaded it on iTunes. And then it was the world at that point. It was a mix of like buying albums and songs on iTunes, finding MP3s on music blogs. I think by this point, we were probably done with the LimeWires, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that feels like we were done by now. So yeah, I definitely heard the full version of the song, but I don't think I knew what belonged where, what came out when, like the EP, like I know there's like a Jay-Z version of a song coming up.
Yes.
It's like, I didn't know where everything was. It was so disorganized.
That's
musically.
Interesting. So that we were in slightly different places because I was all the way in on this band at a level where, like, I remember downloading it off iTunes at midnight.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I can remember being exactly the living room at El Contento Drive where we live, 2270 El Contento Drive. and listening to it in full, like very late, and immediately being super into it. This opening track obviously is kind of just a tease for everything that's to come, but like I knew where everything was. Like I was, because I really thought that this was, as like a U2 fan, I really did have the highest of hopes of this album, because Eno and Lenoir produced the Joshua Tree and Act Tongue Baby.
Okay.
So they,
and those are albums?
Those are somewhat well-known records.
Got it.
From a certain band. So this was their very obvious, not even trying to hide from it, attempt to make their grand masterpiece. Well, so that song, that's a cool thing to listen to anticipate and then hear for the first time, like, do they have that in them?
That song with the lyrics in it sounds like U2.
Right, especially the chorus.
Yeah.
Which is probably a reason why maybe they didn't use it, because they knew people were going to inevitably make comparisons because of the producers behind it. This was a album that was meticulously thought out.
Right.
All right, track two. I mean, all albums should be, but this one especially. Like, some of the conversations in that studio must have been just harrowing.
Tedious.
Just tedious. All right, here's Cemeteries of London, which is a very odd kind of first song, really.
Yeah.
On the album. So this sounds a lot different than the last album.
It sounds different than everything they've done.
Yeah. Just the kind of the tone of it, the sound, it's kind of got a bit of a darker vibe to it.
Yeah.
And the drums and the hand claps, like this is a very pointedly, this is not kind of, I think, what was some of the criticism of the previous album, that it was just like such a naked attempt to have their version of Thriller and just have seven massive hits on it.
Right.
Like, these songs aren't as accessible. It's kind of a weird song to kind of start the album in a way.
I don't think I've heard this song since 2008. It definitely is interesting to listen to it right now, because this is nothing like what they became.
No.
It's...
No. But I like it. I think it's a little weird.
No, I like that they're being weird.
And different, you know? Here's an interesting...
Oh, see, I didn't like that part right there. Sorry to interrupt.
You didn't like the la-las?
No, because that actually sounds like what they became later, with like their weird like world music kind of... Let's have choruses of children singing together.
Right.
All right. So I'm trying to put together some pieces here.
Yeah. That's what they want you to do. Sean Cook from Billboard considered "Viva La Vida" or "Death and All of His Friends" the quote last massive experimental rock album when he wrote his 10th anniversary review, mentioning quote, "We haven't seen another super popular multi-platinum rock record with a number one single really swing for the fences ever since." That's interesting. And I think it's true. Like, one band we didn't mention, the biggest American rock band at this time is Kings of Leon.
Right.
Who in 2008 had Sex on Fire and...
Use Somebody.
And so that was kind of the sandbox that... And that was like, even though we like Kings of Leon, especially that era of Kings of Leon, but... Coldplay is not trying to compete with Kings of Leon or that type of sound or anything else on radio. This is, they're trying to do something weird and different. So I respect it.
Well, and this is when he started dressing different too. This is when Chris Martin went from being like, I'm just a bloke in an oversized,
I'm just a bloke
wearing an oversized football t-shirt.
I'm not a soccer player, but I do like to fit in with the guys.
To being like, I am a band leader.
I'm a band leader now.
I'm a band leader with my baton.
I've got a baton.
And I've got a bunch of different coloured paint
I match
strewn about in my face.
Me and my bandmates matching clothes now.
And we take very, very serious photos where we're all facing the same direction.
Nobody smiles anymore. We're all band. Band meeting. No one smiles no ever more smiles. Again.
No more.
We are now a serious rock band. Do you fucking understand me?
More buttons, please. I need more buttons on my shirt.
What accent is...
I don't even know anymore.
All right, track three. One of my favorite Coldplay songs. I always thought it should be a bigger hit. They must have thought that too, because we're going to talk about the remix they put out about, you know, after this, that had the biggest rapper alive prominently involved. Here's Lost with a slammer. We got a slammer, Bob.
So they know.
Lost! Exclamation point. Listen to this great kind of hip hop beat. Like, I love the way that sounds.
Yeah, it sounds
that
so good.
That beat and the, I think, is that a Hammond B3? Could be.
Fuck yeah, bro.
And Martin is, you know, doing his Chris Martin thing. It's, I think it really works. All right, here we go. Lost.
So good.
Lost.
Earns the slammer.
Now, again, because they couldn't just release the fucking song and choose what it is. They were so, I think, everything was so painfully thought out that they released multiple versions of the song.
Right.
So that's the album version, which I think is very good. It was the third single released. They also then put out a... kind of a old Coldplay version that they called Lost?
Question mark?
Question mark.
Ooh, I like that.
Which is, if you were making a mix, perhaps,
yeah,
for your then-girlfriend, you might use this version, which is more Chris in his happy place circa Parachutes.
Yeah, you don't want to scare her with that heavy thumping drum beat.
She doesn't like that.
No, she gets scared.
She gets very, and you have to hold her tight and put on this version of the piano.
Yes.
Doesn't mean I'll stop. Doesn't mean I'm.
You get the point. So it's that type of song. Now the final one was Lost plus sign.
Huh.
Open parenthetical with Jay-Z.
That's a big parenthetical.
And I'm gonna say, like, I don't consider myself like a diehard Jay-Z fan, but I know, like, I don't know, 18 of his songs pretty well.
I think you probably know even more than that.
Maybe 19?
Maybe 19. Shy of 20, for sure.
You know, this is 2008, so we're about 5 years on from the Black Album at this point. Jay-Z has exited his imperial period, but he's still got some, like, rounds in the chamber.
Has he retired yet?
I think he has retired. Yeah. He's come back. He put out the album that people didn't really like.
Yeah.
As I recall... he had one where he was on like a yacht. It was bad.
Yeah.
But then he came out with the Blueprint 3.
Yep.
And then he had his last big moment. Anyway, so this is in between those 2 points. And I always thought this was a really good verse from him. If you listen to it, there's some good stuff in there. Listen to this. With the same soggy night, you, they gone good night. Just guess that spot.
Pretty good.
Only half if they like you.
That ain't even a half what they might do. Don't believe me, ask Michael. See Martin, see Malcolm. See Biggie, see Pac, see success in its outcome. See Jesus, see Judas. See Caesar, see Brutus. See success is like suicide. Suicide is a suicide. If you succeed, prepare to be crucified. Media medals, niggas sue you, you settle. Every step you take, they remind you, you ghetto. So it's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you have to be Bobby now. And the question is to have had and lost better than not having it all? Because time.
Something about that line. So it's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you have to be Bobby now.
So good.
That kind of is a perfect, kind of perfect distillation of everything that he's getting at throughout that verse. Anyway, so that's a song that has a lot of history to it. But to go back to the album version, I really like that one. What do you think of that one?
Oh, I love it. Definitely one of my favorite songs on the album. One of my favorite Coldplay songs, question mark? I don't know.
Exclamation point?
I don't know.
Plus sign?
Got to think more. Maybe a plus sign.
Let me see how this one did. I don't think it did anything, right? Do you remember it ever getting any type of...
None.
I don't see any juice.
I was just
it.
Thinking it's crazy that this came like a year after Chris Martin was on Graduation with Kanye. So he's just like making the rounds with like the greatest rappers of the era.
In fact, so he's on... Let's see. Let's figure this out. So Chris Martin, he's on Homecoming with Kanye... He's also on a Jay-Z song,
yep.
Like right in that era. And it actually led to...
Oh, I forgot about that. I like that song too.
Like Kanye in a subsequent album kind of talking about a feud that he was in with his protege, which is Jay-Z. And part of it was like, first I do a song with Coldplay and then you do a song with Coldplay. Right. Coldplay was a massive player in music at this time. It's just because it crossed over even into hip-hop in the realm. Okay.
All right, so putting the Coldplay board.
Put it on the board.
To figure out how they got to where they are, you got to put up a picture of hip-hop.
What's a picture of hip-hop?
You know, just a picture of hip-hop. It's like the hip-hop
picture. I'm going to let you try to back out of this one. What is it?
What's the picture? Waylon Jennings is going to come in, and he's going to draw a picture of whatever he thinks hip-hop looks like, and we're just going
to
put that
on the
board.
I don't think we want Waylon Jennings to be drawing any thought on what he thinks hip-hop is or looks like. All right, track 4 is a song called 42. Let's listen.
And since I fell for that spell, I am living in as well. Oh, time is so short, and I'm sure there must be something more. Those who are dead are not dead, they're just living in my head.
Oh. By the way, Lost peaked at number 10 on the Billboard Hot Modern Rock charts. And in the UK, it bombed.
Huh.
It was the first single by Coldplay to fail to chart in the UK top 40.
Wow.
So, everybody was on board with it.
They got scared by those drums. Maybe Lost question mark would have done
Waylon
a little Jennings
better. Waylon Jennings is like,
that.
See what I mean? See what I'm talking about?
Those drums are scary.
Good old boy don't like those drums. All right, so.
This sounds very Parachutes.
It does.
This fits in
You're
Parachutes.
Right. But what's funny is once they even felt that, they're like, all right, we got to change this song.
Right.
Because it can't sound like Parachutes.
Yeah.
So they do this.
Not Parachutes anymore.
Nope.
It kind of is, actually.
Maybe a little Rush of Bloody. It's almost like intersection there.
Yeah.
So, again, because this was a quote-unquote important album and one that every song needed to be different and thought out in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The song is divided into 3 parts. So there's basically 3 songs within the song, and there's no chorus. So I guess going back to that review, that's fairly, for a mainstream rock act, that's a fairly avant-garde track 4.
So we've had an instrumental track one, a weirder shit track two.
Right. Waylon Jennings, Kryptonite, track three.
Yeah, just scaring away all the good old boys, track three. And now another weird one. How is this going to produce a number one single, Dan? How is that even possible?
It won't happen. It can't happen. I like this part a lot.
Yeah. You thought you might be a ghost. You didn't get to heaven, but you made it close. You didn't get to heaven, but you made it close. You thought you might be a ghost. You thought you might be a ghost. You didn't get to heaven, but you made it close. You didn't get to heaven, but you... Do you have any interest in
understanding what the thematic structure of this album was? Do you remember the album cover?
Yeah, of course.
It was a French Revolution.
Yeah.
Painting.
Red flag.
Red flag. Yeah. I think it's the French flag, as I recall. Anyway, so this "Viva la Vida" is a Spanish phrase that translates into English as "Long live life," and shit, I don't know. I mean, whatever you think it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about love, war, revolution. Revolution's like a big theme here for Chris Martin. We're going to get to it soon. The number one single is about that. That kind of cuts through all of it. Coldplay used customized French revolutionary costumes throughout the subsequent tour, which I saw with my wife in Las Vegas, 2008.
That's cool.
All-time gift for a wife or a girlfriend at the time. I went to her apartment in Brooklyn. And she was sitting, I still remember, she was sitting on the balcony, I think of a building that is now where the Barclays Center is.
Okay, yeah.
And I handed her a Rolling Stone magazine with, I believe, Chris Martin on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And she opened it up and there were the two tickets.
Damn.
Bang.
Well done.
Got it. So romance is not dead.
I mean, this was a long time ago. Romance romance was alive in the early aughts.
Maybe the only band at this time that my then girlfriend, now wife, we were equally into a band.
Yeah.
Do you have an artist that would qualify in that way? Like Coldplay from when we met in, you know, right around 2007 till they lost the plot about, you know, 3-4 years later, like that was the band where we were both on the same page and locked in.
Yeah.
Who would it be for you? I don't know.
Never asked.
Does it exist?
Never asked. Is that a
problem? You guys talk?
No, I mean, Pete Yorn was one that we were both obsessed with.
Oh.
Years. The Shout Out Louds were a band that we both loved.
That feels more like a band that Bob would tell his wife you must like, rather than one she would have come to her on her own.
No, it was like I left her the CD and then she got
Isn't
it.
This so great, Heather?
You better like this.
Don't you love it?
Oh, you're saying like came to it by yourself and then the two of you.
Independently, yeah. Like
got it.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I feel like your wife only likes Michael Jackson. Like music that she's, like her stamp is on.
Yeah, probably.
She got there first.
And Rod Stewart.
All right, here is track five. Now we're going to get into still, I would say, somewhat experimental, but more closer to the mainstream. And I believe it was also a single, Lovers in Japan. This song is almost 7 minutes long, Bob. It's like even the songs where they're pretty straight ahead pop in some ways.
Yeah.
Like, all right, so how do we make this one weird? And Brian Eno's like, just make it 7 minutes.
Just keep going.
If you make it 7 minutes. It's no longer accessible. Doobie doobie.
See the Beatles?
I like it.
All right, Bob, time to check in with our friend.
Oh, no.
Your friend and
mine. No, I thought we were done. I thought we were done with this guy.
The greatest critic. Oh, he carries into the reboot, Bob, without a doubt. The greatest music, living music critic, Stephen Thomas Erlewine, known.
Can't he be like our David Hyde Pierce where he just doesn't come for the reboot? We just leave
Oh, hell no. because he is Frasier, bitch. Stephen Thomas Erlewine, also known as STE of All Music, states, Coldplay demonstrates a focused concentration throughout this tight album. It's only 47 minutes, yet covers more ground than X and Y, and arguably a rush of blood to the head that turns Viva La Vida into something quietly satisfying.
Okay.
He does it again. AV Club gave this album a B+. SDE gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. Entertainment Weekly, A-. LA Times, 3 out of 4. Pitchfork, what do you think Pitchfork gave it? Pitchfork, this is the band that exists for Pitchfork to hate it.
I know.
What would they give this album?
They gave this album a 5.1.
6.9.
Oh, damn.
Which means they really loved it, but they couldn't.
Right.
Like, giving it 6.9 is like, it's really an 8.4, but we can't give it that grade, and we can't even give it 7. Oh, so it's 6.9 is almost like the highest score
a
mainstream rock band could get on that site.
I'm normally so good at guessing the Pitchfork scores, but man, I whiffed on that one.
Conversely, Rolling Stone. Feels like something Jan Wenner would love, right?
Yeah.
3.5 stars out of 5.
Interesting.
I'm a little surprised by that. But this album did, some people were turned off by it because it is... It's definitely, again, making its intentions known that it's an artsy record. And right. Some felt a little, you could say it feels a little forced at points.
Well, and Coldplay always had its their detractors no matter what. So right off the bat, they had the haters.
Nice.
And then they brought on some other haters along the way. And then by this point,
we are just knee deep in hip hop culture on this episode. I love it. Robert Christo, he's that like famous guy that hates everything.
Okay.
The critic. He said, applying all of his powers, Chris Martin successfully dilutes Radiohead with, what else? Pleasant results. Anyway, we've given this song short shrift, but I do like this song quite a bit.
Me too. Don't know if it needs to be 7 minutes long, but I like it.
See, this is the secret. If it's 3.5 minutes long, then... They could play it on the radio and people will like it. Or you make 7 minutes long, nobody will like it. Never play on radio. Wait.
That was 3 different accents within like a second. That was so impressive.
And then it won't be a hit. And then we've won.
All right, now it's like a 4 accents and a learning disability.
That's Eno, man. That's just classic Eno. Everybody knows. Like, everybody knows that's classic Eno right there. All right, so Lovers in Japan. I believe that was a single as well, Bob. No, I'm fucking lying to you. It was not a single. There were 4 singles released.
Brian Eno would have killed himself if that was released as a single. That's the last thing he would have wanted.
All right, now, next track. Here's Eno again.
Anything that's better than a 6 minute and 51 second song is a song that's 7 minutes and 6 seconds.
Is Stallone in it?
Hold on, no, it's somebody else.
That's the secret. That's the secret.
Is it old Adam Sandler? Is that what you're doing?
Habba dabba hasha. 7 minutes. Shabadoo. I would say in an album that I quite like, and if you're listening to this, you're probably like, wow, Dan was really into this record. This is the one song that never really did it for me. It's called Yes.
Yes, question mark?
Just Yes. Hopes. Now my back's on the land. My back's on the ropes. When it started, we were all right. But night makes a fool of us in the daylight. I remember reading... In multiple profiles around the release of this album, much was made of Brian Eno telling Chris Martin to
enough with the fucking falsetto. It's time to sing in your lower register.
Okay.
So this is Chris Martin singing in his lowest register.
You see,
it's kind of weird.
If you do a low, the people like it.
Then we got some, what'd you call this, Middle Eastern tinges, Bob?
Oh, you gotta have this. You wanna have a serious record.
Gotta have it. And like the drummer's like, hey, Bri, what the fuck is that? And Brian's like,
you need the Middle Eastern tinges. Because that makes you woolly.
It's killing me that I can't figure out exactly what you sound like right now.
I know what it is.
What is it? Because it's killing me.
I know exactly what it is. And I don't know how it got there. But I'm going to pull it up because I know exactly who it is.
Oh, wait, hold on. I think I have it. Hold on.
I don't know how this got there.
It's a...
You got a guess?
I can't get it.
Alright.
This just saved me from this hell because I can't move on.
This song's kind of a mess. For some reason, Brian Eno, one of the most famous producers of all time, sounds like this.
There will always be a special place in my heart for the movie musical. For the songs that create their most memorable moments.
That was it. Did you hear me doing it just now? I couldn't get it.
Empowering song, Let It Go, from the Oscar-winning animated movie Frozen. Please welcome the wickedly talented,
the wickedly talented
Adele Dazeem. Please welcome the wickedly talented, one and only Adele Dazeem.
The wickedly talented.
I mean, it's
so
much.
The one and only Adele Dazeem.
So much about your accent work that's where we got it. We went from British to that.
The wickedly talented.
All right. So let's reset. So this album so far by arguably the biggest rock band in the world.
What is your dog?
Yep.
Did she hear yes as well? And she's like, why are they trying so hard on this record?
No, I think it was your John Travolta impression.
Here, let me see if she gets upset. The wickedly talented, the one and the only Adele Nazeem.
Her ears just went up.
So far on this album, we have a 2.5 minute instrumental.
Yep.
A really weird as fuck song about graveyards in England. We have the Waylon Jennings Apocalypse.
Yep.
Lost Plus. We have 42, which is
Kirby,
we're gonna have to ask you to leave.
Kirby, you're being rude.
We have 42, which is three different songs with no chorus.
Right.
We have Lovers in Japan, which is a perfectly normal, typical Coldplay song.
But 6.5 minutes.
But turn it up to 7 minutes.
And then, yes, another bizarre song with Middle Eastern tinges at over 7 minutes. So I think even the great Eno, he's saying, like, we gotta land this plane for a little bit. So they roll out track 7, the most accessible Coldplay song ever. Get to the chorus in a minute here.
I strongly disagree with your setup here.
What's that?
I don't know how you can call this the most accessible Coldplay song ever. This is a weird fucking song that in retrospect is accessible because it worked. To me, this is like Losing My Religion, where it's a song that does not sound like the band that you know. It's doing something a little different. The instrumentation's different, but it works so well that it becomes that.
Well, fuck you.
Fine.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, it's just that the song is so kind of part of the world now that it's hard to imagine it not being weird when it first.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you kind of break it down and it's this looping like string section and it takes a little while to get to the chorus. I mean, the chorus is big and anthemic. Yes, so the chorus is one thing. But and then lyrically, it's a very strange song.
So weird.
Like, it, almost to the point where if I were the other guys in Coldplay, which, you know, God bless those guys.
All of them.
What an annoying, like, how annoying is that? I mean,
they're in Malibu, too.
I don't even know if they are. I think it's just Chris in Malibu, and the other guys are still in dreary old London wondering what happened to their band.
I mean, they could probably get a place in Malibu.
But I'm picturing, like, the drummer, Will Champion, for instance. Of course,
yeah.
He's like, God, do you hear this fucking music bed that we came up with here? And this hook we have, like, do not make this song about the overthrowing of a king and the people of a downtrodden nation rising up against their leader. Can you just make this about girls or something like your other shit? Don't do this to us.
Remember the stars, how they shine for...
Can we do another one of the yellows?
Remember how they got all of us laid, like, constantly? Can we go back to the yellow thing?
Talking about Jerusalem bells and Roman cavalries. What the fuck are you talking about? All right, here we go. This is awesome. Speaking of Will Champion, remember seeing this live. And Champion is... seems like a very talented fellow.
But can I just tell you before you tell the story? I just pictured Will Champion like sitting down in the studio, getting behind like his amazing drum kit. He's so like, all right, here we go. Like, all right, what's the next song we got on? Like, can't wait. Like, he's spinning the drumsticks in his hands. And then Chris is like, you're not going to need those.
So pissed.
We got you this. Just hands him a big, dumb fucking drum.
Yeah,
just put this around your neck. Perfect, perfect. All right, now you're just going to pound the side of it over
that's
and
it.
Over again.
That's all he got. And that's what I remember. That's what I remember from the concert is like when that part of the song came up, he had just like a big giant drum he would bang on and then literal like a bell. And it was like, he'd be whacking on this bell. And it was like, in some ways, like drummers don't get a lot of pop and it would call attention to him.
Right.
And he's also the guy going, oh, ah! Like that's his moment too. So Champion in a big spot is kind of into it. But you're right. It is. There are things about it that are a little different.
But you're right. It's become so synonymous with Coldplay. Like, you can't imagine Coldplay without that song.
Let's see. Entertainment Weekly wrote, take the title track in which Martin imagines himself as a paranoid monarch. Who would ever want to be king? Martin asks. Revolutionaries wait for my head on a silver plate. I mean, that is, yeah, that was a, it was a risk to not make that a more straight ahead pop song, like lyrics wise. And
yeah.
And I remember when first hearing that song, and it was, I think, the second single, and thinking to myself, holy shit, they did it. Like,
yeah,
this is going to be massive. And sure enough, it was number one. It was a number one hit on the Billboard charts, their highest charting song ever. They're first to reach the top of the Billboard Hot 100 and they're second to enter the top 10 in the United States. It was the first song by a British act to reach number one in the UK singles chart and Billboard Hot 100 simultaneously since Blank's Blank released in 1971. Think your wife's favorite music.
Wait, what was it?
Since Rod Stewart's Maggie May.
Wow.
First time a UK artist topped the charts on both sides of the Atlantic. Just a massive, massive hit. Also number one on the Billboard's Modern Rocks chart. So it was getting played on K-Rock.
Yeah.
In addition to Z100, a huge adult top 40 hit. It was getting played in dentist's office, supermarkets. It is as big as a song can get at that time. And...
you know who liked it?
Pretty weird song to be that big. I agree with you.
Even Waylon was listening to it.
I think he was into it also.
Yeah, that was one we played in the house a lot. Good times. Mm-hmm. Good memories.
Wait a second. Under their Wikipedia page for the song, plagiarism allegations. Let's get to the bottom of this.
Ooh.
Coldplay were first accused of plagiarism of the songs I didn't write by American alternative band Creaky Boards for the melody of Viva La Vida.
I remember this.
Creaky Board's band member Andrew Hoffner claimed that Martin had heard them playing the song live at a show in October 2007. Wait, so the song is called The Songs I Didn't Write? Is the name of the song? Or am I confused here? What's the name of the song?
Look up Creaky
Board. Oh, no. You know what we're thinking of? Joe Satriani. He had a song that he's a, you know, famous guitarist.
Yes.
A 2004 album, he had a song called If I Could Fly. And let's check that out. Let's see. Let's settle this lawsuit ourselves.
We're going to do it again?
We're going to do it. I Could Fly, let's see if we could hear Viva La Vida. Big moment for Joe.
No.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. Uh-oh. Okay, so...
I mean, if you go by the Vanilla Ice of it all, that one went near. Yeah, there was a ting there.
And that wasn't even the, I guess it also, this is what happens when you have a massive song. Also, Cat Stevens also stated that one of his songs, Foreigner Suite, Yousef Islam, his name is now, also was ripped off. My son brought it to my attention and said, doesn't that sound like Foreigner Suite? Islam said that any legal action he might take depends on how well Satriani does, and Satriani got his case got thrown out in court.
So what about the Creaky Boards? Let's listen to that one too.
Creaky Boards. Here we go.
The song I didn't write.
That is the name of the song.
That is, yeah.
That's kind of weird. All right. The song.
Songs.
The songs I didn't write. Here we go. Creaky Boards. Here we go. I do love
when
the idea.
You have gone to bed, and I am alone inside my head. I turn on the stereo, the one only I can know. And I hear the songs that I didn't write. I hear what they sounded like.
Is this you?
All over town.
Okay, I get it. Very talented.
I think
it's me.
I'm getting big into these guys.
All right, we got it. Let's just complete the Holy Trinity of plagiarism and check in Foreigner Suite by Yousef Cat Stevens.
I can use because the meaning.
Wait, that's 18 minutes long. Here we go. I mean, I think everybody's got to calm down a little bit.
I think people have got to calm down.
I think part of it is like, as the song is going to sound exactly like Viva La Vida also, it's certainly possible he might have picked up some things here or there, but I think he's more a victim, or Coldplay's more a victim of how massive that song was.
Right.
And everybody wanted to hear their song and dollar signs.
You can definitely hear the Satriani, the Creaky Boards, and maybe...
Satriani some... thing is... if I have to make a judgment... I mean, with this guy, though, you know.
This one seems like a bit of a stretch so far.
Because the meaning still leaves for you to choose. And I couldn't stand.
Okay.
I can't.
We can't do it.
I can't. Well, I'm going to do one skip ahead out of respect to Kat. You said. You know what? I'm throwing that out of court.
Yeah, you're out. Get out of here.
Satriani, I will award you $112. the Creaky Boards guys.
Just get them like a case of Miller Lite.
Miller Lights.
Yeah.
Get you some Boggs Lights. And Yousef, I'm sorry, buddy. SOL. From what we heard, There was no connection. No connective tissue. Let's get back into it. So, any other thoughts on Viva La Vida? One of the bigger songs. I mean, honestly, especially within like the category of music that we're into, one of the biggest rock songs of our lifetime.
Yeah, it's funny when you say it like that, but
a number one single
doesn't feel like that, but you're right.
Like, I think maybe one of those Kings of Leon songs might have went to number one also in this time.
Right.
But how many like pure kind of rock artists have gone all the way to number one since this? I would be curious to know who it is. I mean, if you're going to count Imagine Dragons or whatever the fuck, but there's not too many bands out there that even are trying to make straight ahead rock music at this point that are on the charts. Anyway.
And it's funny calling that straight ahead rock music when it's
a little funky.
A little funky.
It's almost like that is the band and Eno finally like hitting exactly the sweet spot.
Yeah.
A weird, different, but very accessible song.
But it's crazy to think about Coldplay as this band that's been around for 20 something years at this point. And if you had to pick the one definitive Coldplay song, you can go with Yellow, Viva La Vida, or I don't know, the Chainsmoker song, and they're all completely different.
Yeah.
It's weird.
All right, here's the first single. Awesome song. Was a long and dark... Good Enoism there, too. It's like, all right, we've got a pretty accessible song here. So let's fucking get a little bit, let's mix things up here. Let's give them 38 seconds of fucking nothing and release this as the lead single. It'll fuck with them mighty strong.
Wow, so many accents in one.
Do we need 38 seconds? Long and dark December, from the rooftops I remember there was snow. I never got sick of this song.
Me neither.
There's so many things about this that I like. In fact, Bob, at the end of this episode, we're going to pick up one song that goes on the Throwback Podcast playlist.
Yeah, we are.
Usually we don't put a lead single as the choice. Because it's too obvious. This was not an obvious song on the album.
I don't know.
It's interesting.
I don't know. Are we open to the other songs that we played on this? Like, could we put the Creaky Boards on the playlist?
As part of the lawsuit settlement? Yes.
Yes. Miller Lights and a spot on the playlist.
So everything, as we've stated, has been painfully thought through, and releasing this kind of dark, moody 35 seconds of nothing to start, kind of strange thematically, the lyrics again, it's nothing really accessible here, not really meant for pop radio, and yet it was the single that they used to introduce the album. Interesting.
I remember thinking it was so cool, because I think coming off of X and Y, which, what was the big hit off of X and Y? I can't even remember anymore.
Speed of Sound.
That's right, yeah. Which didn't do
well. Oh, it had Fix You on it, too.
And it had Fix You.
I love this guitar, by the way. Excellent. Boom, boom, boom. It just got a really good...
Yeah. No, I loved this right off the bat because it reminded me of like a rush of blood to the head. Great vibe. Yeah, great song.
And it does have that little bit of like kind of, I'm thinking why they might have picked it. There's a darkness to it, and it's got a little danger vibe to it.
Yeah.
There's something kind of a little like makes you a little uncomfortable, which I think is exactly what they were trying to put out there, that they were going to take risks and kind of be outside the box and not be what you thought. And then I always like how they come in for landing in a very Martin-esque way here. Mm-hmm. Took my love down to Violet Hill. There we sat in snow. All that time she was silent still. So if you love me, won't you let me know? If you love me, won't you let me know? Very nice.
Yeah.
Kind of, I think kind of like a perfect Coldplay song.
I agree.
Violet Hill. I bet it bombed. I mean, I got certain just because it was the first single.
Right, I'm sure it got a little buzz right off the top. But
can you name the members of Coldplay?
Yeah, Chrissy Martin.
Chrissy Martin. Everybody called him Chrissy.
Yeah, Willie Campione.
Will Champion, correct.
You got Johnny Greenwood.
Johnny Greenwood is from Radiohead.
Close enough.
But I would think Johnny Buckland would be happy to be confused with Johnny Greenwood.
That's the guy I was actually thinking about.
He actually, even in the tradition, the band that was taking the scepter from U2 of the early balding lead guitarist with a signature sound, wearing a hat always. Really, also a little bit on the nose, but it made you comfortable. You saw like the life, the chain of life going on.
Yeah. And I don't think I can do, how many are left? One or two?
There's a good looking bassist in the band.
Can't remember his name.
With a funny name. Very funny British name.
Can't remember.
My name is Guy Berryman.
That's right.
Awesome. If I could come back in another life as a Britishman.
Yeah.
As a Londoner. Please, Jesus, please. I don't think you do reincarnation. Buddha, whoever does it, make me a Guy Berryman.
Guy Berryman's pretty good.
I don't care if I'm a plumber. I don't need to be a handsome bassist, a handsome petite bassist.
Yeah.
I want to be Guy Berryman.
I'm
Guy Berryman.
You as Guy Berryman, reincarnated, would definitely be kind of like a handyman from outside Liverpool, and you would, you'd be a cab driver from outside Liverpool, and you would definitely end up on Naked Attraction.
Oh no.
Yeah, that would be your fate. All right, this is Guy Berryman. Come on out.
Would I have like a hideous anteater penis like everyone on that show?
You would be just disgusting. I mean, immediately disgusting from the first tick up. But she'd keep you around for a little bit.
Do people know about that show?
I don't know who knows about that show.
I don't think we should even tell people if they don't know. I don't think they should know. But if you're really curious what Bob's referring to your kids aren't around, check out HBO and type it in and just prepare to have your mind blown.
And if you're an overseas listener, it's been like one of the biggest shows over there in the UK for like 8 years now. So you all know.
And let me tell you something. Because of my successful podcast I do, I've grown a great affinity for the people of England. And I've gotten to learn a little bit about their culture and what makes them tick.
Okay.
They're randy folk.
They are.
I could say that for the UK, but England specifically, they're horny little fuckers. they love, listen, maybe that's why I get along with them. Maybe, Bob, I feel like if we did a live show in London, there would be a hearty amount of pale white men excited to see us.
My favorite.
They love to drink beer.
Yeah.
And like talk about knockers. Like that's a big part of the element of the British man.
Uh-huh.
And God bless them.
I feel like if you're Guy Berryman, what would my name be? I need to be there too.
You're not a Will Champion.
No.
I mean, the names in this band are outrageous.
Pretty great.
Johnny Buckland, Guy Berry. If you could only be, that's a good game. If you could be one name from Coldplay, what's most likely? Like, what's more like the name that most closely would be connected to?
That fits you?
I mean, this isn't a criticism, but your name is Bob. Like,
yeah.
And Bob is like the most like basic American name. You're Chris.
I'm Chris Martin.
You're Chris Martin.
Yeah, exactly.
Only you're not Malibu. And you're not banging every hot actress that's ever had yellow hair.
Currently with Dakota Fanning or whoever he's with.
I love that Fanning too. Let's talk knockers and drink beer. All right, let's see.
Was that Brian Eno?
The wickedly talented. The one and the only. Listen, let's follow up Violet Hill with Strawberry Swing.
Dakota Johnson is who he's dating. Sorry.
Yes.
That's what I meant to say.
Madame Webb herself.
Yes.
I think I liked this album going into track 7, but this trio of songs, Viva La Vida, Into Violet Hill, Into Strawberry Swing, make it probably my favorite Coldplay album. Well, it
definitely picks up.
That trio of songs, kind of everything that they're trying to do,
yeah,
or they're working toward, they kind of lock in for these songs. And I think this one especially, like, where there's a lot of songs on this album, even the ones I like, that feel like it's a lot of hard work. It didn't come easy. It didn't come flowing out of them. This song is different. Like, this song sounds like an awesome, like, Genesis song, their peak, or like Peter Gabriel. This is Strawberry Swift.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good point.
Really nice. I love that background of it. The West African influences.
Feels like this influenced Vampire Weekend coming up.
Ah, good call. For sure. There's no way that I don't love this song.
Yeah.
Afro pop.
Are we ever going to do Vampire Weekend?
I quite like Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, me too. We should do that.
So maybe we will.
Fine. Maybe we will.
Maybe we definitely will.
Okay, then.
This song is largely built around hand claps, plucked clean guitars, rhythmic cellos, and distant organs and keys. Very cool. Very cool.
I mean, you can't really be too hard on the album because it did so well. But maybe it would have done even better if it came out at a time when The Love Guru and Zohan and The Happening weren't dominating the box office.
Yeah, maybe, it would have definitely done better in the charts.
Maybe we were kind of like the Idiocracy version of our country at this point, and we weren't ready to be challenged by Chris Martin.
Have I brought up SDE yet?
Yes.
He has takes on this song as well.
Doesn't this guy have something better to do?
Gently infectious melody and insistent rhythmic pulse. He is such a way with words.
He needs a hobby.
Breaks from the album's appealingly meditative murk. Do you remember, because I remember because it was this fucking song, when you put out your wedding DVD, remember after you got married?
Yeah.
And then you have the reception, and then part of the absurd price of hiring like a photographer and all that stuff, you get to make a video montage of your wedding reception, and then you get to pick the song that soundtracks it.
This was it.
This was it for my wife and I's wedding video DVD, which I have no idea where exists.
Of course.
Or how I would play it if I found it.
Yep.
Do you remember what yours was?
Oh, no, we didn't do that.
Oh, you didn't?
Nope.
Cutting some corners there, huh, Bob?
Well, we got married way before you. It wasn't a thing yet.
Way before us, 2 years earlier.
Yeah, life was different.
I think you just were looking to save about $240.
No, we barely did a video.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good job. What did you do with that money, Bob?
I don't know, probably.
You punted on your memories?
Partied
hard. For what?
I edited our own video because I know how to edit. And I like.
Oh, you really cutting corners.
I liked making things. So I wanted to have control over it. So I did it. And then I gave it to her 10 years later.
That's right. You guys got married at the courthouse, too.
We had a nice big wedding.
Weddings, I mean, it's so corporate and overblown.
We got married before HD video was common.
How old are you?
2 years old before
man,
you.
I was the best man in the wedding.
I know you were.
It was just like every other wedding I went to in that era.
But we had a regular video camera because it was right before like HD cameras were everywhere.
We had like the big VHS camera on the shoulder.
Not too far off.
2010, right?
10.
You're telling me they didn't have the
they
tech?
They had it, but it wasn't like an obvious
thing.
You
cut that corner, didn't you?
Just didn't want it.
Did your wedding cost $312? It seemed to be a nice wedding.
You were there.
It seemed nice.
It was very nice.
Man, imagine being able to watch that video right now on the DVD.
We have a video. We have a great video. You don't even know where yours is.
I don't. No idea where it is. All I know is like a lot of effort went into the making of the video, and then maybe we watched it once.
So here was my thing. Here was my whole thing with that.
What?
Since you opened up this can of worms.
No. Yeah.
I... put a lot more effort and interest in the photographs because I felt that was way more important because I didn't want a video clouding my memory of the day.
Don't care.
I wanted my memory to be my memory. I didn't want it to be my memory of the video.
I don't care. I don't care about
you started this, Brian Eno.
Well, you've done it, Bob. Your memories are
but we do have
pristine.
A video. We do have a video, and I edited it, and I gave it to her on our 10-year anniversary. Because it took me that long
That's
to do
right.
it.
Right.
Yes.
I remember your wife many times saying that you were working on the video.
Yep, it was so many years.
10 years.
A lot of stress.
It was the Chinese democracy of wedding
it
videos.
It really was. And it came out about as good.
All right, so here we go. Death and All of His Friends. So the album, yes, is called Viva La Vida or Death and All of His Friends. It is the final track on the album. Only 10 tracks, Bob. Eno, go. Hey, dog. What's your dog getting up to?
She's getting comfortable.
6 minutes and 18 seconds of pure bliss to end the album. Let's listen in. I mean, you could like it or not like it, but man, is it a cohesive piece of work. Everything does hang together very well. And this is, like that one reviewer said, it's the last experimental rock album. There weren't too many years after this 2008, where bands even tried to make an album anymore.
Right.
Because that was no longer how music was being consumed. This was very much of the tail end of the era where the album era.
Yeah.
Which, who started? Like the Beatles started it in
Beatles,
the mid-60s.
Beach Boys, yeah.
And it kind of, by the close of the 2000s, that's it. And you don't really see it at all anymore.
You don't see it working commercially, unless you're Beyonce.
I would think like maybe somebody like Taylor Swift put out that Midnight's album. She would disagree. She would say,
well,
that,
yeah.
There's, so it's not that it doesn't exist.
Well, we're
but
saying,
it's just
I
not,
guess we're saying
yeah.
for like rock to be commercial and work in an album form like this is not, it's not happening the way it used to.
All right, here we go. Taking off. So this one's kind of just getting warmed up.
Yeah.
Not a single. But an album closer.
Congratulations, Eno. You did it again.
Did it again. He's credited officially in the liner notes, Bob. This is a very Brian Eno thing.
I want you to credit me not as a producer and not as additional songwriter. Simply put a dash next to my name and write Sonic Landscapes.
Oh, I like that. That's how. That's what
they
I.
They were
want.
Like, "All right,
yeah, whatever."
You sure? Like, you wrote the songs with us.
Sonic Landscapes.
Was that so he can't be named in the lawsuits from Joe Satriani?
Exactly. Well, I like this part. To the point that you were making earlier, have you ever heard this song?
Oh yeah, I love this.
Oh,
song.
You have?
Yeah. This one I love.
Because you were saying you were a little piecemeal with it.
No, it was really only like Cemeteries of London and maybe... That was really the only
42,
one
42, was that? That feels...
No, 42 I remember because the different parts of it.
All right. There you go. That's the album. Before we kind of talk a little bit about what happened after, where would you put this amongst the first four albums? Where would you rank it?
I would rank it, like, what do I want to listen to? Because I definitely appreciate what they did and what they went for and how kind of impressive it is as an album from top to bottom. But if I...
The artistic statement of it all is easy to respect.
Yes. I think if I'm listening to a Coldplay album, I want to listen to A Rush of Blood to the Head.
Got it.
So that's going to be my number one. Then I would probably put this at... Two, edging out Parachutes, maybe. It'd be pretty close. I think those two would battle for two. And then X and Y would be a distant four. How about you?
It's really hard. It depends on where you catch me.
Yeah.
And because these albums came out when we were, their first four albums came out when we were 20, 22, 25, and 28. They're just pretty heavy.
Yeah.
because it really, they soundtracked our 20s
completely
more than any other band. And I have like very distinct memories about all those points in my life. In fact, Bob, now that I think about it, you were visiting Boston when I was up at Northeastern, and we went to Newbury Comics and I bought Parachutes.
Yes, I remember that.
And we went back to my dorm and listened to it. That's pretty crazy. Just realized that.
That's not even our most romantic moment listening to Coldplay together.
No, that we've talked about this, but that doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore. We ended up at a Coldplay concert in New Jersey, sitting alone, separated from the rest of the group we came with. This was on the X and Y tour, and when they went in to fix you, Bob and I were both lost in our own world thinking about our ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, yeah.
the band had that power and the time. But anyway, to answer your question, Rush of Blood in the Head, God, I want to say that Viva La Vida is my favorite, but if I really had to choose, it would probably Rush of Blood 1. But Viva La Vida would be my number 2. Parachutes, pretty locked in 3, and I agree. Yeah. X and Y, while not as maybe bad necessarily as some people seem to make it out to be, isn't at the same level. Now, this is also the same band that in their last album that they put out, Bob, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the songs' titles were emojis.
Oh, yeah, that was so annoying.
So that's...
Yeah.
So how do we get there, Bob? I mean, I don't know. Let's... Real quick, I want to, like... Because, like I said, the thing that really strikes me listening to this album again, Viva La Vida, is clear how much effort they put into it, how important it was to them to do something that was different, how, and then everything you read about it, like it wasn't easy to do, but they did it and they accomplished it. And the album was a big hit. Did they win album of the year? They might have.
I don't remember.
They might have, but they come back after this big achievement with Milo.
Xyloto,
which is some type of, again, they claimed it was some type of, again, like a theme album, a cohesive concept album, but I didn't really hear much of that. But right off the bat, like, here's track 2 on this album, which is one of the more well-known songs, I guess. It's like all that experimental vibe and kind of like the dark edges have all been sanded off.
Completely gone.
This was like the big hit on the album, which is, again, there's like a nice big fat hip hop beat to it. And it's a good song, but it's like almost like a safer version of Lost, for instance.
Yeah, this does sound like Lost.
Let's listen to the music or the beat come in, which is pretty gargantuan. I think it was sampled a lot as well and on mixtapes and the like. The strings are a little goopier.
Yeah.
You know, goop. Ooh, that's good. But it's much more accessible.
Right.
Charlie Brown, another one. Oh, the lead single. So when they came back after Viva La Vida, they were like, let's do like a super poppy, radio-friendly song.
Yeah.
So they were... This one I don't mind either. But again, even this, every teardrop is a waterfall. It's like, what? What's Chris been doing in Malibu?
Right.
Like, what does that mean?
You're right. This sounds so much better now, knowing what comes next. Like, at the time, I was already, like, dismissive. I don't like this stuff.
Right.
But now, knowing where they end up, I could actually stomach this a lot better.
And there's a song with Rihanna on it that's a little weird. But then they really start to lose the picture very quickly. Well, then he has this divorce album, which there's some really good songs on the divorce album. Have you ever listened to Ghost Stories?
I don't think so.
Like, there's the only song that really made a dent, was this song, which,
oh yeah,
this more than anything else was the pivot point.
Right.
Sky Full of Stars is what, when you're trying to figure out, draw the line where Coldplay was to where they ended up, this song becoming a big hit was a... What are you looking at over there?
Just their discography, like how many EPs and albums they've had since this.
And this song has over 1 billion streams.
That's crazy.
What do you think of this song?
I don't want to listen to it.
Yeah.
But I don't hate it the way I hate some of their more obnoxious stuff.
And then from there, but I do think there's some good, like, the slower songs where he's really digging into the divorce. There's a couple of really good ones on that. But then the album after that, now we're like gone. We're in this whole other world.
Oh, is this the I Want to Fuck Jennifer Lawrence song?
Yes.
Yeah, that's all. That's all I know about this song. Now, or I did fuck Jennifer Lawrence and now...
And
like,
it was fucking awesome.
And it was the best thing in the world. Yeah.
Which again, like, we can't really chagrin the man for making love to Jennifer Lawrence. You know, one of the most talented, beautiful actresses on the earth.
Oh, there's no chagrining at all.
And yet, it's like...
And by the way, if you do, and this is the song that you write, I get it.
I would be writing very happy music as well. Put it that way. But, like, it's hard not to, like, miss this. But this... Oh, this was the guy that wasn't fucking Jennifer Lawrence.
No. This guy never fucked Jennifer Lawrence.
That makes sense.
That makes the most sense of all.
This is just like a college student.
This is what comes out of you when you're in college. And then the last thing is what comes out of you immediately post-orgasm. Jennifer Lawrence.
You want to hear... They made a double album, like, after... Like, George Floyd. I was like, what are we doing, guys?
Right.
But so this is the sound of someone that hasn't had sex with Jennifer Lawrence.
Till I drive you away.
And this is the sound of someone that has had sex with Jennifer Lawrence. And also Dakota Johnson. And Gwyneth Paltrow. And anyone else he wants.
So we figured it out. We said we were to get to the bottom of
it. We did it.
It's the Jennifer Lawrence line. The J-Law line.
The J-Law line.
Now we know.
And he slowly worked his way up to that pivot point.
Yes.
Because Jennifer Lawrence wasn't the first beautiful, like, Los Angeles artiste type that he was with. But,
right.
You know, once you reach that point and you have no other choice, after that happens, the next time you pick up a pencil.
Every song you write, no matter how sad you want to be, is going to be happy right. as fuck.
Like, and everybody's like, why can't he write Yellow again? Why can't he write Shiver again? Well, he does try to do that.
Right.
But the problem is, he sits down and he'll even draw a bubble bath.
See, I picture he writes it down and he's convinced it is, and then he hands it to somebody and they start playing it and it's so fucking like happy. And he's like, no! Not again! Why?
It's essentially a devil's bargain. And I don't know if he was aware of it at the time, but like, you will share intimacy with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
But in exchange, you can never write a good song ever again, let alone one that has any level
no
of emotional
depth. No depth.
Depth or longing, because you don't know what that is
right,
anymore.
Right, it's gone.
And you can't even pretend to know what it is because you had sex with Jennifer Lawrence. I think we covered it.
Would you sign that? Would you sign that deal?
Hey, you don't have it.
I know you haven't.
All right.
All right. So we got to pick
a
song.
Well, that was solved.
We did. We're good at this. We're really fucking good at this.
Fucking nailed that.
So now all we have left to do is pick out a song to put on the Throwback Podcast playlist available on Spotify. Follow us at Throwback Pod. To find it.
I feel strongly about two songs, and I want to hear if you feel strongly about two songs, because I feel strongly about two songs.
All right, what are they?
I would say one would be, as we talked about, Violet Hill, which is a pretty ballsy lead single, all things considered, that has a really, like we said, it's kind of dark and a little bit foreboding and a little dangerous, and coming from Coldplay, that is pretty cool. And then I would say Strawberry Swing, which I think, whatever, that's a very, I feel like, it might not seem, this is coming from a true musician.
Right.
It might not seem like an overly complex or difficult song, because it sounds so easy on the ears and it just kind of rollicks its way through about 4 minutes. But that's a really hard song to kind of nail.
Yeah.
And I think they absolutely did. And it kind of is a great... Again, nothing. There's nothing on the discography before that sounds like Strawberry Swing, and nothing after. You can really say that for a bunch of songs on this album, but
right.
Those are the two that stand out to me. How about you?
I want to do Violet Hill.
Okay.
I like it. I like when you called out, like, it's like Martin brings it in for the landing. It has like a quintessential Coldplay moment within it.
Eno gets his flowers Eno by gets just his flowers. Stalling him for 38 seconds. He literally took the microphone and hid it under the couch cushion.
Yes. Yeah.
For 38 seconds.
I said, this would really slow down the fellas. They think that they can start the song, but I'll hold them back.
And that's why he's one of the great producers in rock history.
That's why he's the best.
And who else would think to hide the microphone under the third couch cushion in the lobby?
Nobody. Especially somebody without that massive brain injury that he clearly has based on his multiple accents and stunted speech.
The wickedly talented Chris Martin. We figured out that you are a Chris Martin if you had to be a name.
I'm clearly a Guy Berryman on Naked Attraction season 14.
Big anteater on TV. And that's it.
That's it.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks with more throwback goodness. Till then, as Chris Martin would say, go fuck yourself.
He would.